it is gone. A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins into the second deck for Bryce Harper. Swing and a miss. He got him. And Aaron Nola leads two. Segura on the run. Reaches up and makes the grab.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 339. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. And coming up, we're going to have a special Thanksgiving theme to this podcast a little bit later on. A special little game I want you all to play with me, and you got to give it real some real thought. You daily fantasy players, if any of you guys play daily fantasy baseball, daily fantasy football, you'll understand the game when it comes up here in just a little while. But because it is Thanksgiving week, we're going to do things a little bit differently. It's just going to be you and me this week. I decided to give our tremendous stable of guests who have been coming on with me since 2015. I try to get somebody different on as often as I can, but I mean, just some of the amazing people and amazing guests that I've had on this podcast over the last few years. I'm really so thankful for all of those guys making this a special podcast. It's what makes it different from every other Phillies podcast out there. The fact that we're able to get some people from the outside and Phillies beat writers to talk to you about the team that you follow and that you love so much. And so we're going to get back to that starting next week. But because it's Thanksgiving week, I wanted to give all my normal guests a week off. And so it'll just be you and me. And a couple things I want to talk about to start things off today. We're going to talk about, I did a piece for The Good Fight and I wanted to talk about it a little bit. I did a decade in review for the best moment, the best Phillies moment from every year from 2010 to 2019. So we're going to talk about that in just a second. And also in Major League Baseball, the non-tender candidate deadline is approaching next week. And we'll look at some Phillies who will probably be non-tendered, but also look at the possibility of some other players from around the league who could get non-tendered and whether or not they might be of interest to the Phillies, maybe of interest enough for the Phillies to swing a trade for one of these players in the next few days. Plus, I will have your stat of the week. And just a reminder, everybody, to check out our Patreon for Hittin' Season. It's at patreon.com/hittin'season. We've got some good content up there for you if you sign in on the $5 a month tier. Don't forget to tell your friends to subscribe to the Good Fight podcast feed on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, Stitcher, wherever it is they get their podcasts. And if you're on Apple Podcasts and you haven't left a rating and or a review, please go ahead and give a 5-star rating to the Good Fight podcast feed and make sure you check out the latest Dirty Inning and Continued Success as well. All right, let's start things off with a fun post that I did for the Good Fight. And if you haven't gotten a chance to read it, now you don't have to, because we're gonna talk about it here on the podcast. And there's been a lot of different people doing their look back at the decade of the 2010s. And you know, I kind of wasn't even tracking the fact that it was the end of the decade until this week when I started seeing all these different stories about best players of the decade, best teams of the decade, and all this kind of stuff. So we're going to be doing a lot of this kind of stuff over the last month here on Hittin' Season. I'll be doing this with Justin and Liz. We'll have a different idea, I think, every Sunday night until the end of the year. But the one that I wanted to kind of do to start off the podcast here on episode 339 was I took a look back, and I didn't want to just compile the 10 best moments because, you know, I didn't think that it would be all that interesting, frankly, to just give the 10 best moments, because most of them would come probably from 2010, 2011, 2018, and 2019. There'd be a lot of years in the middle in which we didn't cover some of the things that happened during the dark years. And, you know, look, this was certainly a frustrating decade, I think. You had two division titles to start off the decade. You had one postseason no-hitter. You had a perfect game, four no-hitters in all. You had a full teardown of a championship team, a rebuild. There was talk of tanking. You had the waving of the white flag in Baltimore when Jeff Francoeur was on the mound. You had the death of a beloved star in Roy Halladay. You had the tenure of Gabe Kapler. You had a last hurrah for a cavalcade of stars. And then you had lots of stupid money spent in the last offseason. So no doubt we had some good memories and we had some memories we'd probably just rather forget. But let's go through year by year, and we're gonna look at what to me is the best moment of each season here over the last 10 seasons, starting with 2010. And I don't really think, I think there's basically two options here, and they're both involving Roy Halladay. You can either choose his perfect game against the Marlins during the regular season, and that was amazing. But for me, obviously, I think it was the playoff no-hitter, the historic no-hitter in the National League Division Series against the Cincinnati Reds. Listen, there have been only two no-hitters in the entire history of Major League Baseball postseason. and one of them was thrown by a Philly in Philadelphia. It's just incredible when you put into context the magnitude of what Roy Halladay did that night and how special that moment felt. You know, outside of winning the two World Series, maybe it's the most special moment in Philadelphia Phillies history.
Halladay is one strike away. The 0-2. A bouncer. Ruiz. In time! Roy Halladay has thrown a no-hitter!
I mean, just goosebumps. And I have a great personal story that goes along with that. That was the night that we had our first ultrasound for my oldest son and realized that we were going to have a boy. And I remember listening to that game in the car on the way home from the doctor's office. And just what an amazing day that was, man. That was an incredible day to be a Phillies fan. And I think outside of the two World Series, probably the best moment in Phillies history. It really is. I think that's probably number three for me if I really think about it. In 2011, there wasn't a whole lot from 2011. I know the team won 102 games, and yes, you could look at the night they clinched the National League East. I think Halladay threw a complete game, but we'd already seen four of those in a row, prior to that. You know, when they got into the playoffs, you had the Ben Francisco game in the playoffs, and that was a great moment, but they ultimately lost that series. So for me, I'm just going to take a moment from the regular season that I think everybody remembers fondly, probably more fondly than most other moments here on this list, and that was Wilson Valdez, 19-inning marathon on May 25th, pitched the 19th inning of a game that was tied at 4. I mean, listen to this. Roy Halladay started the game. He went 7 innings. And was then relieved by, listen to these names, Michael Stutes, Ryan Madsen, Antonio Bastardo, Kyle Kendrick, J.C. Romero, and then David Herndon. And then they got 5 innings from Danny Baez until they ran out of pitchers. And that's when Wilson Valdez came into the game.
And Wilson Valdez, he's not a pitcher, but he is tonight, as he will take over for Danny Baez here at the top of the 19th. In the air to right center field. Martinez on the run. He has room. A step from the track. One away. How about Valdez was shaking off Sardina? Greg Gross at 86 went two-thirds of an inning. 89, he went 1 inning.
Oh, he threw him a breaking ball and he hit him with it. Unbelievable. And Roland just stood there and he can't blame him because he knows it's not going to hurt him.
Fly ball. Shallow center, long run for Martinez, hand up, he's got it, 2 outs. Wow. I mean, there's not 45,000 here, but there are a lot of folks still here. They're loud. Fisher struck out his last time. Pop up, right side. This place is going to go nuts. Polanco under it, puts it away. How about Wilson Valdez? Smiles all the way around. High fives as he goes back to the dugout.
I mean, that's just crazy, right? I mean, it's really fun to see a position player pitching. I mean, and the Phillies have obviously done it a whole lot more over the last few years. But as of that night, it hadn't been done in 9 years. I mean, I forget who it was that was the last person to do it before Wilson Valdez. But this was only done. This was like break glass in case of emergency type stuff. And so that's what made it so special nowadays. I mean, you saw Gabe Kapler. It was part of his strategy during spring training to train some position players to pitch, and he used it to the point where I think it was ridiculous at times. In 2012, again, now things are starting to get pretty bleak pretty fast here in Philadelphia, and I think 2012 might have been the bleakest season, because entering that season, we thought the Phillies still had a chance to continue the run, but Ryan Howard tore his Achilles on the final pitch of the 2011 season, and it took him a long time to come back. Chase Utley was dealing with his degenerative knee issues. He was fielding ground balls in spring training sitting on a chair, and then Roy Halladay's demise came out of nowhere faster than any of us thought. So, yeah, Halladay got his 2,000th strikeout that season. Jimmy Rollins got his 2,000th hit. But for me, I think the best moment of the season was when Jim Thomae, who'd come back to the Phillies to be a left-handed power bat off the bench, hit the 13th walk-off home run of his career, the most in big league history.
In the air to left field. Towering shot. Forget about it. He did it. Jim Thomae, opposite field, pitch hit home run, and the Phillies have won it.
Oh.
A walk-off home run for Jim Thomae. All
the talk about whether he could do it off the bench. He's worked hard to make believers out of everyone, and he does, at least for this one day. And he also ties Sammy Sosa for number 7 on Major League Baseball's all-time home run list as the Phils win it 7-6.
All right, moving on to 2013. Y'all remember Dominic Brown? How could we forget about Dominic Brown? It's kind of a bitter topic. It's a tough thing to remember. But he was once one of the top 2 or 3 prospects in all of baseball. Certainly the Phillies' top prospect. They kind of jerked him around a lot, where it looked like he was going to get the gig and then didn't get the gig. He was sent down to the minors, brought up, and I don't know how much of that messed with him long term. But in 2013, for one half of a season, the first half of the 2013 season, Dominic Brown played like we all thought he would. He made an all-star team, had an .856 that year in the first half with 23 home runs in the first half of the season, including an insane run during the month of May in which he hit 6 homers in 5 games.
Brown slams one deep to right field. Forget about that one. It is gone! For the second time in this series, a 3-run home run for Dominic Brown. And the Phillies take the early lead.
Of course, things did not finish up well. His power numbers cratered in the second half. He had just 4 home runs in the last 44 games, missed some time with injury. He played 144 games in 2014 and had an unbelievably awful .634 OPS that season. Played terrible defense, too. Was just one of the worst baseball players in the league. And then would have one more bad season of big league baseball before shuffling off back to the minors in independent ball. Just such a sad situation the way that worked out. 2014, there were surprisingly some really good moments to choose from here. The team threw a combined no-hitter that season. Ben Revere cranked 2 home runs, and I was at one of the games in Washington, D.C. when he hit the second of his 2 home runs that season. And Chase Utley hit a walk-off homer, his first since 2006. But for me, the moment that had to be the number one that season was Jimmy Rollins breaking Mike Schmidt's all-time franchise hits record at 2,235.
And now the 3-ball, 1-strike pitch to Rollins. A line drive toward right field. There it is! Jimmy Rollins is now the franchise leader in base hits with 2,235. A remarkable accomplishment for a lifetime Philly player who at the age of 35 passes Mike Schmidt, and Mike Schmidt is the first to greet him out at first base.
Moving on to 2015, this is when the rebuild really started getting going. I think up until 2014, they still had some hope that they could turn things around, but this is when they started selling all the pieces. And the big trade chip that they had in 2015 was, of course, Cole Hamels. Everyone knew Hamels was getting traded, and everyone knew when he took the mound, he had been injured for a few weeks before taking the mound at Wrigley Field in what would be his final game as in a Phillies uniform against the Chicago Cubs. Cole Hamels made history, a no-hitter in his final game in a Phillies uniform.
The 3-2 pitch to Chris Bryant. In the air to center field. Herrera going back toward the wall. Does he have it? He reaches down. Did he make the catch? He made the catch! The 13th no-hitter in Philadelphia Phillies franchise history has a little bit of drama right at the end. Cole Hamels, he is back, and his teammates are mobbing him right around the pitcher's mounds.
And hey, maybe a reunion is coming, which makes it a little less bittersweet. In 2016, the farewell game for Ryan Howard that year certainly was a special moment, but it wasn't a great moment. You know, I thought it was mostly sad because at that point in his career, Ryan Howard had gone from being this unbelievably terrifying power hitter to a decent left-handed power hitter part-time player. And everybody knew that it was going. And at this point, it was at the end of that 5-year extension, which everyone had all said was the worst contract in baseball. And by that point, people were ready for Ryan Howard to leave. And it was just sad. It was sad. I mean, and I miss Ryan Howard terribly. I miss that player. So that's not a great moment. That's not the number one moment of that season. Instead, for me, Vince Velasquez's second start with the team, his first in Philadelphia, a 16-strikeout complete game shutout, was easily the most electric moment of that season.
And now the 1-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. He got him! 16 strikeouts for Vince Velasquez, who throws a 3-hit shutout, and the Phillies
Yankees have defeated the San Diego Padres 3-0. The 23-year-old has arrived in his first start here at Citizens Bank Park.
Now, unfortunately, Vinny Velo has been chasing that start ever since. I mean, we see the potential. We know what he could do. But he has never replicated that start, and if he is going to be a part of this team in 2020, it's almost certain that he'll be a bullpen arm and not a starting pitcher. So a lot of these great moments you're hearing were guys that gave us a thrill in the moment but didn't really pan out, which is kind of disappointing. Now, we're hoping this next one doesn't follow that same trend, because in 2017, the story of 2017 was Rhys Hoskins coming up from the minors and going on a kill-crazy home run rampage that was never done before and hasn't been duplicated since.
Out to right center field. That one is crushed. It is gone! Opposite field home run for Rhys Hoskins. He just may be an alien. A two-run shot, and the Phils are on top 7-0.
That was 18 home runs in his first 34 games. Again, no one had ever gotten that hot to start their career before, and no one has done it since. In 2018, this is the year Aaron Nola emerged as one of the great pitchers of the National League. And there were two starts late in August that he went up face-to-face with Max Scherzer. And these two guys, along with Jacob deGrom, were battling out for the National League Cy Young Award. Eventually, Jacob deGrom would win it because Aaron Nola faltered in the month of September, and deGrom probably would have won it anyway. He was unbelievable. But Scherzer and Nola would finish 2-3 in the voting. And in August, first in Washington, D.C., and then in Philadelphia, these two guys battled it out, and it was electric. The game in Washington on August 23rd, which the Phillies won 2-0, was absolutely bonkers.
2-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. He got him. 95 on the outer edge. And Aaron Nola leaves two here in the eighth inning.
That was a strikeout of Bryce Harper when the Phillies were holding a 2-0 lead. Harper was the go-ahead run at the plate, and he blew a fastball right on by him. 4 days later, they would meet again, and Scherzer lasted just 5 innings and gave up 3 runs. Nola had a 3-0 lead in the seventh, but he ran into a little trouble, but left with a 3-2 lead. Unfortunately, the Phillies' bullpen blew that lead, gave up 4 runs in the ninth, and the Phillies' disintegration in the last month of the 2018 season began in earnest. But in those two starts, Nola pitched 15 innings compared to Scherzer's 12 innings. He gave up 2 runs, just 1 earned run, while Scherzer gave up 5 runs. Nola gave up 9 hits, Scherzer just 6 hits. Both guys struck out 15. Nola walked 3, Scherzer walked 4. We might never see that level of Aaron Nola again. I hope we do. But if we don't, that was just an amazing run of pitching by Aaron Nola that season, capped off by those two starts in which he outdueled Max Scherzer in those last two games. And I think if he had had a strong September, Nola probably would have finished ahead of Scherzer in the Cy Young balloting. Finally, this season, 2019, it's pretty obvious, I think, what the signature moment of 2019 was. Free agent signee Bryce Harper with his signature moment of the season against the Chicago Cubs, down 5-1 in the ninth inning.
2-2 with the bases loaded and one out.
Harper, oh, my God.
Deep to right field. Way up there and way out of here. Second deck walk-off home run. Grand slam, Bryce Harper. Wow. The Phillies have come from behind to win it 7-5.
That homer alone may have been worth the signing. I mean, watching him sprint around the bases after that home run in total glee was just one of the most fun moments I've had as a Phillies fan over these last 10 years. So I think it's a great way to finish up this list. Check out the piece at The Good Fight if you want to see the video from all those different moments. Check out, again, it's at thegoodfight.com. Make sure you check it out, and you can see all of these moments that you've just been listening to and relive them for yourself. Coming up, we're going to get into some of the Phillies non-tender candidates and some other non-tender candidates from around Major League Baseball that could eventually be of interest to the Phillies. That's up next right here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So one of the things that's going to be happening next week is the Phillies are going to have to make some decisions on a couple of key guys and decide whether or not they're going to tender them contracts for this next season. Of course, I'm talking about Michael Franco and Cesar Hernandez. I think, you know, Michael Franco's time in Philadelphia has ended. We've talked about him a little bit in the past. Again, he's only 27 years old, but Mark Feinsand of MLB.com wrote up this list that I'm kind of looking at as far as non-tender candidates that could surprise people. And I guess for people outside of Philadelphia, the idea that the Phillies would non-tender Michael Franco is surprising. But if you've been watching him play for the last few years, it really shouldn't surprise you all that much. And he notes there were 129 players in the majors with 20 or more home runs last year, and Michael Franco was not among them. It's the first time in his four full seasons with the Phillies that he hasn't hit that many. He had a 705 OPS and an OPS plus of 80 in 123 games last year. That's just really terrible production. He earned $5.2 million last year after avoiding arbitration, but with 2 years of team control remaining, the number is going to continue to go up. So the Phillies, I think, are going to go in a different direction for third base. They're either going to sign Didi Gregorius to play shortstop and then move Scott Kingery over to third base, or they'll go out and they'll sign Josh Donaldson or Mike Moustakas to play third base. But I think one thing is perfectly clear, and that is that Michael Franco will not be back at third base next year for the Phillies. It's just a matter of whether or not there's a team out there that really believes in his potential enough to the point where they think he's going to be the next Adrian Beltre. Not defensively, of course, but Adrian Beltre was a very late bloomer in terms of his offensive skill level. So was Jose Bautista. But of course, those are outliers. Those are not guys that you would normally think Michael Franco would turn into offensively. The holes in his game are obvious for everyone to see. Too many ground balls, too many pop-ups, doesn't hit the ball on a line nearly enough. He hits the ball hard, but can't elevate it, and the outside part of the plate is just Death Valley for him. So I definitely think Michael Franco will be non-tendered. I don't think they're going to find a trade candidate. I also don't think they're going to find a trade candidate for Cesar Hernandez. I mean, I like Cesar Hernandez a little bit as a player, but he's just going to be so expensive. As you heard me and Liz Rocher talk about on the last podcast, the two sides settled on a $7.75 million deal last year, but MLB Trade Rumors predicts that he's going to make nearly $12 million in arbitration next year. There's no way the Phillies are paying that kind of money to a guy with an OPS plus under 100 each of the last two seasons. And they have some internal options to replace Cesar Hernandez as well. Scott Kingery can move to second. They can put Gene Segura at second base. And there might be some players on the market that could be available. I would look at Eric Sogard, as you heard me mention last week on the podcast, as a potential addition to play in the infield someplace. So Cesar Hernandez, I don't think, again, they're going to find a trade partner to deal him someplace else. I really believe they're going to non-tender him. And the deadline to non-tender players is on December 2nd. So that is coming next week. Now, as part of his piece here for MLB.com, Mark Feinsand notes some players that all could be non-tendered by other teams that might be surprising. One of them is first baseman Greg Bird of the Yankees. The only thing with this guy is that he's just been riddled with injuries over the last few years. But he was one of the young guys that was coming up that everybody thought was going to be the next great young power-hitting first baseman for that team. And even though he's got a pedigree that teams might like, I don't think he'd be of interest to the Phillies as just a first baseman only. Here's a guy that could be of interest, and that's Jackie Bradley Jr. In 2015 and 16, he was an above-average offensive player, and he's always been an outstanding defensive player. The Phillies could be looking at help in center field. Now, he's going to get an arbitration number that's going to also go over $10 million, and the Red Sox are trying to bring that payroll down. He's not been very good offensively the last few seasons, and you wonder if there's a better offensive player in there like we saw in 2015 and 16. So I think that the Red Sox will probably find a trade partner for him and that a team will be able to negotiate a lower salary with Jackie Bradley Jr. And I wouldn't put it by the Phillies as possibly being one of those teams, because the Phillies have Adam Haseley for center field and they could certainly have Scott Kingery in center field. But if you're looking on the free agent market for an upgrade in center, Jackie Bradley is probably going to be the best you have if he ends up not getting traded and is non-tendered by the Red Sox. So if I'm the Phillies, I'm at least asking, what is the price here? What's the price? I mean, maybe they'll trade Michael Franco for, I mean, they're not going to do that because they have really good Rafael Devers at third base. But I mean, maybe there's a young pitcher on the Phillies roster that the Red Sox wouldn't mind swapping. Maybe they'd be interested in like Vince Velasquez or something for Jackie Bradley. Who knows? Right-handed pitcher Kevin Gausman of the Reds avoided arbitration last year. He earned $9.35 million with the Braves, but again, fourth year of arbitration eligibility, he's going to probably make $12 to $13 million. He's 28, was claimed off waivers by the Reds back in August. The Braves let him go after he'd put up a 5.72 ERA this season. We only had a 3.98 FIP, which tells you maybe there was a little bit of a little bit of bad luck that went into that, and probably a lot of home runs that went into that. Had a career best 10 strikeouts per nine innings last year, but he pitched in the bullpen mainly for the Reds. I don't know that the Reds are going to want to pay him the amount that he's going to be owed, but I don't love Gausman. I would rather stay away from him, but he is, I guess, somebody who the Phillies could potentially have some interest in. You've got Joe Panik at second base. Mark Feinson thinks could be somebody who's not tendered arbitration. Joe Panik doesn't really do a whole lot for me, and again, the Phillies have a bunch of different options there that they could do at second base. Again, if you're looking for a center fielder and you're looking for somebody who can really play above average defense out there, Kevin Pillar of the Giants could be non-tendered, according to Mark. But again, another below-average offensive player had a 293 on-base percentage last year, so this doesn't seem like the kind of guy the Phillies would want to build around. Addison Russell, obviously very controversial guy. Second baseman, shortstop of the Cubs, remains to be seen what Chicago tries to do with him. Obviously, the domestic violence stuff going on with him is, you know, the Phillies are dealing with their own domestic violence issue with Odubel Herrera, and I believe are trying to just get him off the team as quickly as possible. Doesn't seem like they'd want to bring on Addison Russell if they're trying to get rid of Odubel Herrera. Right-handed pitcher Aaron Sanchez of the Astros. This is an interesting guy. 27 years old, avoided arbitration last year. Agreed to a $4 million with the Blue Jays last year. He was traded to the Astros midseason, started four games for the Astros, but then got hurt late in the season. So here's the thing. I mean, the Astros invested something in him. I'm not so sure they're ready to get rid of him. They obviously saw something in him that they liked, and if the Astros see something in a pitcher that they like, there's oftentimes something there to go ahead and try and mold. So if Sanchez is being talked about in trade and it doesn't cost you much, or if Sanchez becomes non-tendered, I would probably have at least some interest in him, provided that he's healthy. Blake Treinen of the Athletics is someone else Mark Feinson thinks could be non-tendered. He's pretty good, man. That's a pretty good relief pitcher. He had a 4.91 ERA and a 1.6 WHIP last year. It was a bad season for Blake Treinen, but before that, in 2018, had an 0.78 ERA and 38 saves. I mean, relief pitchers are up and down just by nature. I would definitely be interested in Blake Treinen in a trade or as a non-tender pickup. Then you have guys like Jonathan Villar of the Orioles and Mike Zunino of the Rays. Maybe Zunino of the Rays if you're looking for an offensive backup, but you know, neither of those guys really hold a whole lot of interest to me. So those are some possibilities, according to Mark Feinson, and some interesting names of guys who could be non-tendered on December 2nd or who could be available in trades between now and then, in much the same way that Cesar Hernandez and Michael Franco are available in trades. And again, it's not surprising on our end that Hernandez and Franco are probably going to be non-tendered, probably not going to be traded. But some of those other names, I would at least stop and think about. Some other news that was made here on the day before Thanksgiving, the San Diego Padres have taken one of the best relief pitchers off the market. Drew Pomeranz is going out to San Diego, agreed to a three-year deal. At the time I'm recording this, we don't have the dollar figure amount for Drew Pomeranz, but he really exploded out of the bullpen with the Brewers last season. He was a starter for his entire career up until midseason this year. Struggled as a starter, but then just blossomed in the bullpen. And so that's where his future lies. And, you know, he was with the Padres before, had a 2.47 ERA and 17 starts for the Padres back in 2016 when he made the All-Star team. Finished the year with a 3.32 ERA. And when he got traded to Boston, obviously there was a lot of controversy over that trade because when he got to the Red Sox, he basically was worn out and missed most of that season. And there was some talk as to whether or not the Padres knew that he was injured when he was traded to the Red Sox. So the Padres are going to use him in the bullpen. That's a bullpen arm the Phillies could have gotten that would have really helped out the pen quite a bit, but instead goes to San Diego. He would not have required a draft pick compensation. He did not get the qualifying offer. So I do think it is interesting that the Phillies decided not to go in that direction. Maybe just the Phillies deciding not to run the risk of another multi-year deal with a veteran relief pitcher. I mean, I can understand if maybe they are a little bit gun-shy in that. All right, one last thing before we get out of here. There was something cool that Fantasy Football Today put up, and this is in honor of Thanksgiving. They wanted you to build your own Thanksgiving fantasy lineup. They give you $20, okay? And so basically you can spend this $20, this fictional $20, on a main course, a potato dish, two side dishes, and a dessert. And there's a couple of extras that are going to cost you money. But here's how this works. If you want to buy a whole turkey, it's going to cost you $5. If you want to go ham, it's going to cost you $4. If you're going to get just white meat, it's $3. Just dark meat, $2. And if you're going with tofurkey, that's a $1. That's $1 to buy one of those. As far as a potato dish goes, mashed potatoes are $5, sweet potatoes $4, au gratin $3, roasted potatoes $2, baked potatoes $1. As far as side dish number one goes, stuffing is $5, corn is $4, green bean casserole is $3. Creamed spinach is $2, and beets were $1. The second side dish included mac and cheese for $5, Brussels sprouts for $4, squash for $3, cranberries for $2, and creamed corn for $1. And then as far as desserts go, you had pumpkin pie for $5, apple pie for $4, cheesecake for $3, pecan pie for $2, carrot cake for $1. If you want to get gravy, that's going to cost you $3. A biscuit is $2, and cornbread is $1. And so I was going through, and I decided on what my ideal lineup was here. Tell me whether or not you agree with this. Okay, I went turkey dark meat for $2 because for me, I like dark meat more than I like white meat. If you're getting a whole turkey, that means you want to choose between and have both white and dark meat on your plate. Just pick one. You save at least $2 by picking one. So instead of getting the whole turkey, and I need turkey with Thanksgiving. Ham is for Christmas and Easter. I love ham. I adore ham. I actually think I like ham better than turkey. But if you're talking about Thanksgiving, you got to go turkey. So a whole turkey would have cost me $5. No way I'm doing that. That's way too much money to lay out for turkey. And even white meat was $3. You know what? Give me the dark meat for $2. That way I can save some. So now I have $18 to spend on everything else. So as far as the potato dish goes, I really love potatoes au gratin. That's a good value buy. Sweet potatoes obviously are amazing, but sweet potatoes are a dessert in my mind. So I'm already going to get a dessert down there. I need something else savory here, and I just can't say no to mashed potatoes at Thanksgiving. So I'm going $5 here. I'm getting the most expensive thing. I'm going with mashed potatoes. Now I'm up to $7. So I have, what is that, $13 left to spend here. For side dish number one, again, I'm going expensive here. I'm not getting beets. I'm not doing spinach. I'm not doing green bean casserole, and I'm not doing corn. I need stuffing at $5. So I'm spending half of my allowance here on mashed potatoes and stuffing. All right, but I've only spent $2 on turkey, so I'm balancing this out. So now I'm at $12. I've got $8 left to spend. Side dish number two, here's where I got to make a tough call. Ordinarily, I would probably go with mac and cheese for $5, but I can't spend that kind of cash. I'm not doing Brussels sprouts for $4. I'm not doing squash for $3. You know what? I think cranberries here is a huge value buy at $2 because cranberries are so traditionally Thanksgiving. I would have thought that would have been $4 and Brussels sprouts would have been $2. So the fact that I can get cranberries here for $2, that's where I'm going here. So now I've spent $14. I have $6 left to spend, and all I have to do is get a dessert and get some extras if I want. So I know that I want gravy. I need gravy for my turkey, for my mashed potatoes, and my stuffing, and that's going to cost me $3. But you've got to have gravy if you're going to have turkey and mashed potatoes and stuffing. You've got to. You've got to. It's a must-have in this situation. So that's $17 now. I have $3 left to spend on my dessert, which means that it kills me to not get pumpkin pie here. And it kills me not to get apple pie because pie is my favorite dessert in the world. But to me, Thanksgiving is all about the side dishes and the turkey. And so I'm going to sacrifice here my preference for dessert, and I can get cheesecake at $3. I'm not doing carrot cake. I hate carrot cake and I don't like pecan pie. I love cheesecake. It's not as good as the pie options here, but I've got $3 left to spend. Cheesecake costs $3. That's where I'm going. So here's what I got. I got dark meat, mashed potatoes, stuffing, cranberries, cheesecake, and gravy. That's my fantasy Thanksgiving food lineup for $20. I challenge anyone to come up with a better Thanksgiving lineup than that one. I don't think you can do it. It's just not possible. All right, to finish things off, here is our stat of the week. And this week, it was Jimmy Rollins' birthday. Happy birthday to the 2007 National League MVP. And MLB Stats put out this number. He remains the only person in Major League Baseball history to have a season with 20 triples, 30 home runs, and 40 stolen bases in the same season. Yes, Albert Pujols or Chase Utley probably should have been the MVP in 2007, and Chase Utley would have been the MVP had his hand not gotten broken by John Lannon that season. But that was a historic season by Jimmy Rollins. Again, the only player in history to have a season with 20 triples, 30 home runs, and 40 stolen bases. Happy birthday to Jimmy Rollins. And folks, that'll do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. Thanks everybody for checking out the podcast. Just a reminder to, again, please leave a rating and a review at Apple Podcasts. Check out our Patreon. It's at patreon.com/hittin'season. Sign up on the $5 a month tier. And everybody have a great Thanksgiving. Enjoy the day. Enjoy the football. Hopefully we'll get some better Eagles news on Sunday. And don't forget to check out, I have a podcast that's also out here for Thanksgiving on the Bleeding Green Nation podcast feed, a new BGN Memories I want you to check out, where I talked with WIP's Glenn Macnow about the Bounty Bowl and the Ice Bowl. The Bounty Bowl was 30 years ago on Thanksgiving Day in 1989, and we talk all about that. Again, that's on the Bleeding Green Nation podcast feed, which, again, you can get at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever it is you get your podcasts. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time here on Hittin' Season.